Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to The Man Cave, where joining me tonight for Diz Dad's podcast number 502 for Sunday, May 21st, 2017, are Josh Schusterman.
Hey, how's it going?
Eric Anderson.
Hey, folks.
And Tim Hicks.
Hello, mates.
Now, this is going to be the second region of round one of the Diz Dad's podcast quick service dining tournament tonight. We'll be looking at the first round in what we're calling the Seafarers region, so named because this region is anchored by panel member Josh Schusterman's Top Sea, the Columbia Harbor House. And we'll get into that discussion in just a minute, but before we get there, I want to thank our sponsor, Fantastic Memories Travel, and its Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so that you can focus on the fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. All right, I think everybody knows the drill, but just to review very quickly, we'll go through each of these matchups in the Seafarers region. I will talk out the teams or the restaurants that are competing. I'll ask somebody to take a side, make a case, see if there's any real argument on the panel. And if there is, we'll hear out the arguments, take a vote. And if the panel is able to come to a winner, right, if they split 2-1 and it looks like there's a winner, I can vote to make a tie if I want, or if they somebody abstains along the way or doesn't want to vote, can't make up their mind, and we have a 1-1 tie, I can vote to break a tie. But those are the only times I can vote, to make or break a tie. The votes will initially come from the panel. And if we do end up with a tie, then we will throw those out to the listeners. We'll post a poll on the website when the episode goes up and ask our listeners to break those ties. So, everybody clear on the way this works?
Yes, sir.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Yep. All right. In that case, and it's time to begin the Seafarers region. First matchup here is Top Seed Columbia Harbor House facing off against sort of a hybrid. The restaurant that was actually drafted was Arista Crepes in Disney Springs, but it appears, as we kind of did a little post-draft research, that Arista Crepes has sort of been folded in with Amorette's, which was solely a dessert place. And actually, it kind of makes a certain amount of sense. Arista Crepes was offering some savory crepes, which is what got them to be candidates for this tournament in the first place. So we just figured we'd treat them as a single entity for our purposes here. So Columbia Harbor House versus Arista Crepes / Amorette's. And I'm going to ask Josh to go ahead and make the case for a winner here, because this is his top seed. So what made Columbia Harbor House your top seed, and why should they advance?
I'll go ahead and start with, I like the pun that you made with the Arista Crepes being folded into Amorette's. You know, crepes get folded, so well done there. But obviously the clear winner there is Columbia Harbor House. Like I said in the draft, it's in my opinion, the best quick service in Magic Kingdom. I know some will argue Be Our Guest there, but what I like about Columbia Harbor House over Be Our Guest, and hopefully in later rounds we have an opportunity to make the argument one over the other, is that you don't need a reservation for it, and they have more seating, more availability. You're able to get in and get out more quickly, I think. And their food choices are really good. Always really solid with the popular food choices. Got good stuff for kids, good stuff for everyone, good location. So obviously clear winner in this round. And I think they can go deep.
So anybody actually want to try and make a case for Arista Crepes or
I'll jump in here. Wait. Are you sure it's called Aristocrates or is it Aristocrates? I'm just wondering.
Well, it's not Greek food.
Well, see, there you go. So crepes, yes. Right. Crepes is a unique kind of thing that you just can't get everywhere, including Columbia Harbor House. So, you know, they have, yes, Columbia Harbor House has, you know, your typical fare, kind of boring. They do have a couple of interesting things, yes. But crepes, that's something that you won't find anywhere else in the park. So I'm going to make the case for Aristocrates and Amorettes.
All right, just based on uniqueness. So, Eric, who's right here?
It's going to go to Columbia Harbor House. You can also get crepes in France. There's a stand. So I think the uniqueness argument falls on that one. But if you look at the Columbia Harbor House menu, I think there's great stuff up and down the menu. I would eat almost anything on the menu, which I can't say for a lot of places. I think the lobster roll is not the best lobster roll in the world, but I think everything else on the menu is really strong. They also have an interesting, you know, sort of seating venue upstairs where you can look out over that passageway between the castle and Liberty Square. So that's definitely my pick on both food and sort of the ambiance of the place.
All right.
Lobster rolls. Blow to the head. Blow to the head. Blow to the head.
You know, I got to say, that's not even my favorite dish at Columbia Harbor House. The one that always impresses me at Columbia Harbor House is that they have a really, really tasty grilled salmon with couscous and steamed broccoli.
That's my favorite, too.
I mean, you would swear it was a table service meal. It blows me away. So, all right. Well, we got definite votes for Columbia Harbor House from Eric and from Josh. Tim, I don't even have to ask whether your vote for Aristocrates was serious, because you ain't got enough there to get through anyway. I'm certainly not going to make a tie there. So Columbia Harbor House will advance in the easy win.
Just trying to be the devil's advocate. It's all good.
Devil's advocate, really one or the other. All right, so we have our first winner in the Seafarers region, and we'll move on to what is likely to be a bit closer here. Little matchup. This one's kind of interesting to me. On the one hand, we have the 8 seed, and all right, I'm going to be obnoxious and just pronounce the shorthand version of it, which is Les Halles, the boulangerie from France, which is the 8 seed. And maybe a bit of a dark horse 9 seed in the Gasparilla Grill from the Grand Floridian. So we have one that's a resort restaurant, one's a theme park restaurant, different styles of food, different locations, different kinds of things. Eric, get us started. Pick a side.
Thanks a lot. This was a really tough choice, I think. I think there's a lot of good stuff on both the menus. I think despite liking Les Halles a lot, it's sort of to Gasparilla Grill, just because I think, you know, going back to the uniqueness argument from the last game, they've got a lot of really interesting stuff. They've got a mahi-mahi Reuben over there, which is really interesting. They've got other sandwiches. They've got make your own salad deal. So unless you just want to gorge on pastries, I think that I'm going to go with Gasparilla Grill.
So we've got a vote for Gasparilla Grill. Anybody want to try and make a case that Les Halles deserve to be the higher seed here?
Okay, so I'll chime in here. This one was tough for me too, but I think Gasparilla has it over Les Halles, and I'll add to, what was already said about the menu. I will add the location and the fact that depending on the time of day, you can stop there for kind of like a late dinner and catch the fireworks there. Not sure exactly how that's going to play out with the new fireworks show. I know there's a lot of projection stuff there, but I mean, you'll still be able to see fireworks and the laser lights.
We're talking, you're talking about Gasparilla Grill. You can see fireworks.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's why I think Gasparilla would take it over Lay's House.
All right. So two votes for Gasparilla. Tim, is there anything to be said for Les Halles, or is it just going to get stomped by the in a what would normally be a mild upset? But if it's 100%, I don't know that you can call it a mild upset.
No. This is going to be a clean sweep because Gasparilla, you got not only the food like the mahi mahi Reuben that was just amazing, but the ambiance of the Grand Floridian. That's my pick as well.
Wow. I mean, I guess, I'll give the restaurant there in France, Les Halles, its due, because I think maybe it's gotten short shrift here. There are some things on that menu that are really terrific and unique. First of all, you get that sort of international setting, that immersive feeling of your French bakery with the smells of France and the kind of backdrop and everything of all that going on around you. You get solid entrees like, a really good BLT on great bread. You get even simple things, right? The brie apples and cranberries with multigrain bread is a sandwich, is a just a little different kind of sandwich.
And it's a winner too, yeah.
And so good, exactly. Croissant, all of that there. I think the desserts, obviously, at Les Halles are way ahead of the game. And I think my favorite thing is that there's a really large selection of snacks that are all really good and available for a snack credit. And they're especially great in the morning grabbing breakfast because, look, grabbing a grab-and-go breakfast at Gasparilla, you're getting the same thing you would get almost anywhere else, including, the store instead of the restaurant. But snack credit in Les Halles will get you, a bacon and cheese roll. It'll get you tomatoes, olives, and Gruyere. It'll get you a chocolate croissant. It'll get and a real fresh chocolate croissant, not one that's in a plastic package. A beignet filled with chocolate and hazelnuts.
This was probably looking at this corner of the bracket. This one was probably the closest, I would say, because of all the things that you're mentioning. I mean, yeah, Les Halles is a wonderful place, but so is Gasparilla Grill, and they both have, their pros and cons. But I think in this particular matchup, I think the edge just slightly goes to Gasparilla Grill. And I mean, it easily could have gone the other way. I just, in my opinion, and I guess in everybody else's on the panel here, I mean, it just kind of swings a little bit more towards Gasparilla on that one.
Yeah, I guess.
But it was very, very close. Yeah.
So a 3-0 vote, but a close, three close votes, and it still means that Gasparilla gets a clean sweep. And so the number 9 seed has perhaps surprising margin of victory over Les Halles and advances. That takes us to another sort of odd matchup, I guess I would call this one. It's a 12-5 matchup. You would expect it to be a little bit of a mismatch. But the 5 seed in this case is Sleepy Hollow Refreshments in the Magic Kingdom. And it's matched up with Kabuki Cafe in the Japan Pavilion in Epcot. And what I think makes this such an interesting matchup is that each of these is sort of what you might call a second tier restaurant of its type in its location, right? Kabuki Cafe kind of plays second fiddle to Katsura Grill. Sleepy Hollow Refreshments, similarly, kind of play second fiddle a little bit to the bigger restaurants with their own seating and things like Columbia Harbor House. So 12 versus 5. Tim, who ought to go advance here and why?
Well, okay. I looked long and hard at this one because, you know, I do enjoy sushi, and so does my 18-year-old son who loves sushi. His 9th birthday party was at a sushi place, for crying out loud. And so, you know, that really played strong. But then I've got 6 words for you: sweet and spicy chicken and waffles. And there's one place you're going to get that, and it is not Kabuki Cafe at Sleepy Hollow. So that's going to get my pick for this one.
All right, so Tim says that the sweet and spicy chicken waffle sandwich takes it for Sleepy Hollow. Anybody want to make the argument for Kabuki Cafe here? Wow. Again, nobody nobody up for this battle.
Well, I think that it does have some stuff to recommend it, like alcohol. So you're not going to get that at Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, but I don't like sake, so there you go.
But this is the home of the frozen Kirin.
Mm-hmm. There is that.
There's some beer. There's some plum wine. So there is that going for it.
And they do shaved ice with sake, which is a rather interesting combination.
Right, and that's. You know,
I'd rather they did the shaved ice with the Kirin, but yeah.
Well, that's what the head on the Kirin is.
They might do that for you if you ask.
Probably.
It might not taste as good, but they might do it. No, I mean Kabuki is a, you know, it's a good place, and you know, Sleepy Hollow for me, what I like to go to Sleepy Hollow for is that the Nutella and berry waffle sandwich that they got there.
Oh my God.
And I guess Aaron, you were mentioning during the draft that sometimes I guess the sweet and spicy chicken waffle sandwich might not be available past a certain time in the day at Sleepy Hollow, which kind of brings that down a little bit in its value, because if you can't get that, if you can't get it, you know, the savory meal type sandwiches, you know, around like, you know, an evening meal kind of time, you know, then it's really not a place that you're going to want to stop at. Whereas Kabuki Cafe, they kind of suffer from a very limited menu option. I mean, they've got 3 sushi options and that's it. So if you're looking for something a little bit more filling than shave ice and alcohol, you know, you've only got a couple of options there, but at least you can get those. At least you can get those, you know, throughout the day and not have to worry about, you know, well, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Am I going to be able to get, you know, a meal from here?
Right. Well, so, no, 3 o'clock has always been fine, but the one that kills me, and again, I have to admit, I haven't had a chance to go back since the most recent return of the chicken waffle sandwich to the menu. But in the past, the savory entrees from Sleepy Hollow have essentially disappeared at 4:30. They stop serving them. And they continue to serve the sweet stuff and the funnel cakes and all that stuff, the snack stuff, but they don't serve the savory items. Now, in this case, I think in some ways Sleepy Hollow probably gets saved by the fact that it went up against a restaurant that has a somewhat similar limitation, right? I mean, I adore the sweet and spicy chicken waffle sandwich. It's one of my favorite things to eat in Walt Disney World, period. But that's about all that's there. And when I want to eat at Sleepy Hollow, the rest of my family usually eats at Columbia Harbor House, and I grab my Sleepy Hollow food and meet them. Just because they're not into it. So, but I think unfortunately that in this case, Kabuki suffers the same problem. If you love sushi like Tim's son, that's great. But
let me pose this question at you. If your family wanted to eat at Teppanyaki, would you go down to Kabuki Cafe to get your sushi fill and then join them?
No.
All righty then.
I think, yeah, that kind of plays it there. Now I will throw this out there. You know, I can confirm this, you know, after we record this, I'll be in the parks, but, looking at the menu online, the official, Disney World menu, for Sleepy Hollow, it does mention for the breakfast egg and cheese waffle, it says served until 12 p.m. It does not have any other times listed for any of the other menu items. So I don't know if that means that they've, you know, changed and now offer that sandwich all day,
right,
or if that's just not posted on their website.
Yeah. And I honestly don't know the answer to it. In this case, it doesn't appear to matter. It looks like Sleepy Hollow advances, relatively easily. And I think it'll be interesting as they move forward to see how Sleepy Hollow continues to fare, because it's a great example of someplace that has one stellar item on the menu, but, you know, has to deal with the fact that it's a somewhat limited menu. Okay, so we move on to our next matchup in this sort of sub-regional section. And this is a straight-up Epcot battle. A couple of restaurants that could, you know, probably have a food fight with one another. We have the number 4 seed, Sommerfest in Germany, facing off with Kringla Bakery Og Cafe from Norway, a late pick in the 13th round. And let's see, anybody want to choose one of those to make a case for?
Yeah, don't everybody jump in at once.
Yeah,
I was fighting the mute button here.
Go for it, Eric.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think for me, Kringla wins hands down. I think they've got a wider variety. They've got some more exotic choices. And they also have the school bread, which some people get really, really crazy for, as well as, you know, other things like sweet pretzels. A lot of dessert options and interesting entree sandwiches as well. So I think that compared to more of a limited choice, I think at Sommerfest takes it.
All right, so we've got a case made for Kringla Bakery. Tim, you going to defend Sommerfest here?
Yes, I sure am. And here's the reason why. Having spent 8 years in Iowa and being exposed to really great German food, going down to Disney World and having just a snack or something along that line at Sommerfest really reminds me of that, you know, that really authentic German food. And you can get a brat, you can get a frankfurter anywhere. And that's, you know, it's all good. But then again, you have the jumbo pretzel. And I think the Hodge would back me up on this. You want that. But also it's a strudel. It's an apple strudel, I believe it is.
Yeah, it is, with it's vanilla
classic.
Sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's really delicious. And for me, there's not very much in terms of Norwegian food that I really care that much for, even though I have some of that in my background. I must have more German in my background because I really enjoy the German food.
All right. So, Josh, who's got it right? Is it Eric and Kringla Bakery or Tim and Sommerfest?
So I think this matchup really comes down to taste. They're two different, cuisines, two different palates. And it really comes down to, you know, which one you kind of prefer. I also originally come from a heavy German influenced area in southeastern Pennsylvania. So I'm going to have to throw my vote towards Sommerfest there, for the same reasons. I mean, you know, that it's just, in my opinion, That's just what I prefer is the German food style there. Now I think if any of these matchups kind of rate a tie, you know, this might be one, because again, I think it really comes down to
your personal preference. Exactly.
Your personal preference. Yeah. What kind of food that you really enjoy? Is it the German style or is it Norwegian style? Because I mean, I do enjoy smoked salmon as well. So,
I detest smoked salmon.
in this case, well, and there you go. But in this case, you know, I think I prefer more German food than I do Norwegian food. So,
all right. Well, so it comes to me at a 2-1 vote, and I am going to go ahead and invoke my host power here, and I'm going to make a tie. I'm casting my vote for Kringla for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think Kringla is not getting enough credit here for a substantially more diverse menu than Summerfest. Basically, your entree choices at Summerfest are sausage or sausage. It just depends on which kind. Whereas at Kringla, you know, there's a lot more variety here. There's some similarities, but you get everything from, you know, meatballs with mashed potatoes and gravy to a really, really tasty sandwich in the Norwegian Club. Ham, turkey, bacon, Jarlsberg, and Munster cheese with tomato, onion, and lingonberry mayonnaise. I mean, come on. Just a
yeah, but go to your local flavors. IKEA, you can get that.
Okay, but I can also stop in a dozen places and grab a hot dog.
All right, good point.
You know? Now, it wasn't that easy. I mean, you know, I may have made it sound a little, you know, like it was a done deal for me, and it really wasn't. I do appreciate the broader menu there, and for me, that's why I'm going to make a tie. I have to admit that, you know, Summerfest has a big lead when it comes to your beverage options. Everything from a nice, what, four different, you know, German beers there on tap, different options, to Baron Jaeger and bourbon, if you're in the mood for that. And even a Riesling, if somebody would rather have wine. So, you know, there are some things to say, to be said for Summerfest menu, but for me, the core of it really needs to be the entree options and what you're getting from the restaurant on the entree side. That's enough to convince me that, you know, we ought to let listeners decide, and I will cast my vote for Kringla and force a tie. So, listeners, cast your votes. Go to DizDads.com. You'll see the poll posted probably in the post immediately following this podcast episode. All right. Well, we do still have one more half of our Seafarer region to go, and we'll jump up to the number two seed in this region, which I thought was sort of an interesting, maybe a bit of a reach for a second round or a second seeded restaurant. But nevertheless, Restaurantosaurus in Animal Kingdom is the number two seed. And it may have gotten a bit of a gift facing off against the number 15 seed, the Golden Oak Outpost. So, let's see. Haven't heard from Eric first up for a while. So, Eric, you want to make a case for either Restaurantosaurus or Golden Oak Outpost?
Yeah, I do think Golden Oak suffers a lot by comparison in this matchup. It's, again, got a very limited selection. I think Restaurantosaurus gives you some pretty standard fare, but it at least has a broader selection. And the sort of ambiance of the restaurant, it's got some decent theming. You can sit down in there, which is also a bonus. So my lean on this one is heavily toward Restaurantosaurus.
Right. Anybody going to try and make an argument for Golden Oak Outpost?
Well, I'm going to make an argument against Restaurantosaurus, and I may be a little bit on the handicap side because the last time I went to Restaurantosaurus was probably 2008. And to me, the best thing about it was the air conditioning, because otherwise it was nothing more than a glorified McDonald's.
Now, to be fair, in 2008, if I recall correctly, it still was a glorified McDonald's.
I think it was, yeah.
Because it was part of that. It was part of that deal.
I have not given another chance since then because of that.
Yeah, no, that was part of it.
It very much was a glorified McDonald's.
It's really funny. That's
for those of us that are long-termers, you know, I've not even given it a shot since then because I'm like, oh, yeah, I could go to McDonald's anywhere, and I hate it anyway. I won't go to the McDonald's right by my office, for crying out loud.
Yeah, the irony there is that it was part of that marketing deal that Disney had with McDonald's for a few years. It's the same now, reason that the you have those labels in the dinosaur attraction on the pipes.
Now, you know, it's kind of interesting though, because if I'm remembering correctly, Golden Oak Outpost, what preceded it was a McDonald's fry cart, was it not?
It probably was.
That's what you call ironic.
Yeah, they were probably part of that same deal. Now, I will say that when Terry, I believe it was Terry that drafted Golden Oak Outpost, and he did make the point when he drafted it that one of the reasons he drafted it, it's not on the menu all the time, but for whatever reason, sometimes they serve a really interesting sort of waffle fry poutine. Not always.
Oh, that's right. I remember him saying that. Yeah.
Not always, but it's there sometimes, and that was enough to at least get it drafted. It was late.
I wonder if it's something that you could ask for, even if it's not on the menu. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But in any case, I thought I should mention that that's what got it in. Obviously, Eric has cast a vote for Restaurantosaurus. Tim is not so fond of it, but seems to. I didn't hear a decision on a vote there. The one other thing I will add about Restaurantosaurus that hasn't been mentioned here yet is that they do get some bonus points for me for the kids' meal served in a bucket. Right? They give the kids the bucket and shovel with the kids' meal.
Buckets are always handy.
Yeah. And I just wish,
Especially go over to the bone dig after that, right?
Exactly. And I just feel like it's a little unfair, that would be an automatic vote for me, except that they don't give those to the adults too.
If they were giving those to adults, they would need to be filled with booze instead of kids' meals. Just saying. Why is the rum gone?
Exactly. I mean, why is the rum gone? We deserve it. How come we don't have the bucket of beer option?
Thank you.
Or why don't they have a femur-shaped yard?
Oh, there you go.
Ooh.
Theming and
now
everything.
You're on it.
Theming and everything. Genius. All right. Well, I guess we do need to take a really quick kind of survey vote. So we have a vote from Eric for Restaurantosaurus. Tim, you actually casting a vote for Golden Oak or abstaining or giving Restaurantosaurus credit for no longer carrying McDonald's fries?
Well, there's that. Now I'm going to abstain on this one because, like I said, I've got a 9-year gap where I can't really vouch for Restaurantosaurus. But, the Golden Oak – the fact that you would have to, ask for something decent like poutine. I'm just going to abstain on this one.
Okay. So we have no vote at all from Tim. Josh, where are you headed?
I'm going to have to go with Restaurantosaurus. I mean, Golden Oak, to me, just looking at the menu as it is today on the website. And, if you got to ask for other food, then, if they don't have it or, whatever the case is, I mean, at least Restaurantosaurus has food,
Yeah.
other than, a side of fries. So.
All right.
It's got to have to be Restaurantosaurus for me.
Fair enough. Good argument. Restaurantosaurus will advance. I don't see any reason to get involved in this one. Not that it would matter anyway. So we have a winner in that matchup and we move on to a bit of an odd matchup. We have an oddball entrant in the 12th round or from the 12th round in the AMC Theater Fork and Screen. It was kind of on the edge about whether that counted as counter service or table service. It was in the tournament.
kind of a hybrid, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, you do order from a menu. You give the order to the, usher who goes and gets it, but then when you're eating it, you're not really sitting at a table eating it. You're kind of pulled up to a counter, and the food is more counter service type food, it seems to me, than table service type food. I don't know. In any case, it's the 12 seed, and it's up against Min and Bill's Dockside Diner, which is itself a little bit of an oddball place because it's kind of a, food window, for lack of a better way to put it, at Hollywood Studios. Not really much of a restaurant to speak of, but has some outdoor seating in its area. So, Josh, Tim, either you want to make an argument for one of those two restaurants?
I think I would have to put mine towards the upset in the AMC theater. You know, I mean, they've got a much more extensive menu, plus the added bonus that, I mean, you're watching a movie while you're eating. And, I mean, you know, the movie theater I have here in town, the best I can get is maybe like a bag of nachos. You know, if I'm lucky and they you know, got them in stock, you know, and some stale popcorn. So, I mean, that's, to me, it's kind of, it's different things because, you know, one, if you're going there, you're going to see the movie. So that's like 2-3 hours of, you know, of time blocked out. So, you know, you're kind of eating during that, which is the bonus there. Whereas the other is you're in the parks and it's a place that you can go to eat quickly while you're in the parks and you're not taking up a lot of your time. But I think if we're trying to compare them, you know, apples to apples there, I think the theater wins, for the menu.
All right. So Tim, is there an argument to be made for Men and Bills?
Yeah, I'm going just the opposite of that. You know, 2 or 3 hours away from everything else. You know, the whole notion of this is quick service, not 2 or 3 hours worth of watching a movie and eating crappy food. Not that Dockside Diner necessarily merits a 5 ranking like it's been given. I mean, this probably should be like 11 versus 12 rather than 5 versus 12. But I'm going to go with Men and Bills just because it's convenient, it's quick, it's not terrible food, and it's right there, you know, at like you said, the side of the edge of the lake there in Hollywood Studios, where you can, you know, get on with the rest of your half day visit after you've munched on that.
Wow, I think that might be the most backhanded vote we've ever had on one of these.
Zing.
So, Eric, it's a 1-1 tie to you. Who's right?
I'm going to have to go with the more expensive menu and the better looking food at the Fork and Screen. I understand the argument that, yeah, it's a bigger investment of time, but just focusing on the food and what's available, I'm going to have to give it to the movie place.
All right. Well, in that case, it comes to me at 2-1, and I think I'm going to, for the second time in this region, I'm going to make a tie and throw this to the listeners. And I'm going to throw it to the listeners for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that, you know, I hadn't even really thought about this point about it at all, but, you know, Tim kind of draws it into the focus here. It's not really quick service when you're going to sit for 2 hours plus and watch a movie. There's nothing quick about it. Part of the quick service experience is that it's not just less expensive than table service. It also is a meal that you can enjoy and then get on with your vacation experience. And that's part two, which is I got a Fork and Screen just down the street from me. If I want to go see a movie and have them bring me my food, I can do that here. I can't go sit on the edge of Echo Lake and have stormtroopers doing a show just off to the side, or, you know, relax and have dinner as they prepare, you know, have a late dinner as they prepare for the Star Wars Galactic Spectacular show to happen in front of me. So
now, see, I can't do either one of those things. So, you know, way to make me feel bad.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for living out in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a movie tavern here, and let me tell you, the food and the beverages, adult beverages at the movie tavern, are far and away better than any AMC theater experience I've ever had.
So I guess
that's another way to go against AMC.
I will say this though, I do live at the beach, so I mean, right. That's,
you do have that advantage. I think that Men and Bills, although the menu is small, it's a pretty solid menu. You know, their pork slider is not the best barbecue I've ever had, but it's decent. You know, the hot dog is good. It's a couple of different ways. You get it with the pulled pork on it and coleslaw. So it's kind of the Southern dog, I guess. They call it the Carolina footlong, or a chili cheese dog. Their nachos are a good portion, and the guacamole is good in them, and you know, they're worth eating. So I don't know. I appreciate that it's not just another chicken nugget place, and the location is a nice location. It's a good place to be, especially when, you know, now that they're doing all these extra kind of show elements to make up for all the construction that's going on. A lot of the time, you know, you sit at Min and Bill's and have your lunch, and hey, you get a show. And depending on what you went to see in the theater, it might be a better show.
True that.
All right. So we're going to let the listeners make the call on that one. And that's a 12-5 matchup. We've got one more contest in this region to resolve. Oh, I'm sorry, two more matchups in this region to resolve. And I'm very much intrigued by this next one. We have Yak and Yeti Local Foods from Animal Kingdom. So not Yak and Yeti the sit down, but the counters that are kind of next to where Yak and Yeti are. Yak and Yeti Local Food Cafe versus Boardwalk Bakery, which dropped to an 11 seed. And I thought that maybe was a little bit low. So let's see. Eric, you want to pick one and make a case?
No, not really.
Tell us how you really feel.
They're both, I think they both have stuff to recommend them. I'm not a huge fan of Chinese food, so there are several items at the Yak and Yeti local food cafes that aren't really in my wheelhouse. I think the Boardwalk Bakery is fine, but again, it's one of those places where you're in there mostly because you're, I think, staying at the hotel, and that's where you refill your beverage mug. I mean, they do have some good stuff. I've had a couple things there. It's, I think, more for, you know, grabbing something and taking it with you somewhere. But Epcot's kind of right there, too, with a lot more selection. So, I don't know. I'm going to have to, I think, give it to Yak and Yeti, just because they do have some more exotic menu items, even though they might not be in my particular wheelhouse. They do, I think, do a good job with them.
Okay. So we've got a bit of a conflicted vote from Eric there for Yak and Yeti. Josh, what do you think? Is he right?
Yeah, I think he is. And I mean, Yak and Yeti, they have a cheeseburger and a hot dog. So if you're not all that into the Chinese food, you can get those. Or, you know, the kids can get, you know, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich if they want. So, I think for that reason, that kind of covers the, you know, the, if you're not that into the exotic palate or even just Chinese food, because I mean, it's not all that exotic. But I think they, again, kind of reoccurring theme here, that they have a bit of a more, a larger menu, or at least a more diverse menu, And they're in the park, and like Eric said, I mean, you got Epcot right there for Boardwalk, so you know, your first thought isn't let me stop at Boardwalk Bakery. It's let me go, you know, to World Showcase, which is, you know, like a 10-minute walk from there, or even, you know, some of the other stops, you know, between there and Epcot. So,
all right, so Tim, are you of a mind as well that it's Yak and Yeti that takes the day here, or is there an argument for Boardwalk?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the upset, and here's why. In January, when we were there last, that was the Boardwalk Bakery was our first choice. We stayed at the Boardwalk. That's true. But, you know, we had the choice of just walking into Epcot and getting something there. But we chose to stop at the Boardwalk Bakery because the food there is always very high quality. I've never had a bad experience or something that I just went, man, this is pretty pedestrian. This is pretty, you know, it's just something to stuff down your gullet. Whereas Yak and Yeti, whereas in the beginning when Animal Kingdom was in its younger days, the Yak and Yeti local foods really had excellent, excellent food. And I know Adam Dale and his girls would agree with me on this one. You know, the food was just really good, really different. They really took their time and did it well. But here in the last couple of years, the menu has changed, and the quality, in my opinion, is not what it used to be. So I'm going to go based on the uniqueness, not the uniqueness of the food, but the quality of the food, and I'm going to go with Boardwalk Bakery.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at it, and I'm inclined to kind of lean in that direction as well, and you know, consider making a tie here. I think that on the one hand, you know, Boardwalk maybe doesn't get the credit that it deserves for the more diverse menu that's developed there over the last couple of years. It's not just pastries anymore. You know, there are like nine or so different, you know, entree items, and not all of them are sandwiches. I mean, most of them are. That's their forte, but even the sandwiches are a little different. You know, it's the Turkey Club is pretty much the same, although they've got maple bacon spread as part of their Turkey Club sandwich, which, you know, they ought to get some credit for that.
Yeah, it's delicious too.
And so I'm tempted to say, you know, they get credit for trending in the right direction, and maybe Yak and Yeti maybe is trending in the wrong direction. You know, is headed in a way that has been less than we expect of them. On the other hand, Yak and Yeti still gets the bonus of having the park atmosphere. It's still got some items that you don't find as many other places. I mean, yeah, they may have dumbed the menu down a little bit by throwing the cheeseburger and hot dog on there, but at least you can still get some interesting toppings, right? I mean, not every place that you can get kimchi on your hot dog. And they do still give things an Asian twist that isn't always there in other places. And that, you know, you can get that Safari Amber from Yak and Yeti, and I know there are plenty of bars nearby to Boardwalk, but they don't really have much of a booze menu at all at Boardwalk Bakery, if anything. So,
no, I don't even think they do.
Yeah. So I think that despite the temptation to do that, I'm going to let this one slide. And Yak and Yeti Local Foods will hold seed against a somewhat ferocious Tim.
Hey, let me throw one more thing in there. It's hot in the afternoon, and there's no place to sit. There's lots of places to sit, but it's full, it's crowded. You know, you fight the birds for the, you know, for your food. That's just one more argument I'll throw in there.
No, sorry, too little, too late. I already made up my mind. Yak and Yeti moves along. 6-11, and we have one last match. This one, you know, would have been much closer before the last menu revision, I believe. But we have two Magic Kingdom restaurants, and again, might be an example of restaurants trending in opposite directions. We have the number 3 seed, Pecos Bill's Tall Tale Cafe, versus the Friar's Nook, number 14, over in Fantasyland. So Frontierland versus Fantasyland. Josh, make an argument here.
I don't think that there's much of an argument to be made anymore. I think it's Pecos Bill, hands down, on that one. Not really much I can say, I don't think, other than just the, you know, the you know, the number of options that you have at there over at Friars, than more options than you have. I'm sorry, it's way past my bedtime. More options that you have at Pecos Bill than you would have at Friars Nook. Plus all the indoor seating that you have there, the toppings bar. I mean, to me, there's not really a fight in between these two.
All right. So Eric, is there anything to be said for Friar's Nook?
Nope. That was quick. No, Mexican food wins for me, hands down.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Devil's Advocate, you have a defense for Friar's Nook?
Unfortunately, the with the latest revisions, they've practically taken all the food off the menu at Friar's Nook. So my Devil's Advocate position would be that, yes, there is a lot of food on the Pecosville menu, and it's all kind of cheap and sleazy. You know, but, you know, on the other hand, yeah, I've got to go with Pecosville on this one.
All right, now. I'm going to throw this at you here because I'm curious, and I'm going to look and see whether I can find a more recent update. I'm looking at a Friar's Nook menu that says it was checked for accuracy on March 12th, 2017. So that's just a couple of months ago. And according to this, the pot roast macaroni and cheese is still on the menu.
As far as I've heard, that change was actually made within the past couple of months, and it's not on the official menu.
Okay, so it's not on the Disney menu.
It's not on the Disney menu online. Now, that's not to say that it might not be. Maybe it's the same thing as the poutine. You know that maybe you have to, like, you know, give it a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And they throw it on there for you, you know. I mean, I know they do have the secret nachos at Pecosville, you know, that you pay $150 for, or whatever it is. I think it's like $90, but still, it's not on the menu. You got to order it special. So, I mean, who's to say that's not the case with that? But I think even with that on there, it's still a tough play for that.
Well, the official menu is showing a barbecue chicken mac and cheese, but I'm not a fan of mac and cheese in the first place. But yeah, what I'm hearing is a DDCC challenge on the secret nachos. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question that there needs to be a Diz Dad's Club convention nacho fest. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely. It's a requirement.
Well, we got to do it.
Yeah, and I'm looking through here. I think that what you're saying is exactly what happened. That the pot roast mac and cheese was replaced by barbecue chicken mac and cheese, and frankly, that's just a bad switch. You know, talk about shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, it's like replacing your you know, starting point guard with the coach's son, who usually sits on the end of the bench and comes in when you're up 20.
Yeah, it's not a bad analogy, actually.
All right, so we have a clear win then for Pecosville Tall Tale Cafe. Just to recap where we are then, working our way up from the bottom of this bracket, we had Columbia Harbor House with the easy victory over Aristocrepes / Amorette, despite Tim's Devil's Advocate effort. We had Gasparilla Grill with a somewhat surprising margin of victory over Les Arts Boulangeries, a 9 seed upsetting an 8. Sleepy Hollow Refreshment held off Kabuki Cafe, a 5/12. We then got the first of the pair of ties in this region with Kringla Bakery, the 13 seed, and Summerfest, the 4. Locked in a tie. It's going to be up to the listeners to resolve. Paul, you can only vote once. You can't vote for your beer and pretzels over and over again. I will know. I track IP addresses.
You know he will.
Oh, I'm sure he'll try. Yak and Yeti Local Foods held off a challenge from Boardwalk Bakery. Tim did his best to convince me to throw it to listeners, and I decided not to. We do have to have a listener decision in the 12 versus 5 matchup, AMC Theater Fork and Screen, you know, basically time versus food is what it comes down to, I think, against Min and Bill's Dockside Diner. And then finally, the 2 seed Restaurantosaurus, survived Tim's McDonald memory of it and, gets to, advance against the very limited menu of the Golden Oak Outpost. So as we wrap up, guys, anybody have any thoughts on this region, any surprise players, any restaurants that you think you know, might be either lasting longer than you initially thought, or you think might make an earlier exit than some people think.
Well, I'm kind of curious as to what everybody else thinks about whether it's more surprising that Gasparilla Grill, the 9 over the 8, was a sweep, even though we all kind of conceded that it was, you know, a tough choice, but it was a sweep. And then you have, you know, 4-13 a 15 and a 3 ending in ties. Or I'm sorry, it was a 13 and a 4 and a 12 and a 5, both ending in ties, but yet you have a 9 and an 8 with a sweep.
I think the 9-8 was more of an electoral college victory.
Oh, you're killing me. No, I agree. It's very interesting that the seeds that were that far apart are locked in a deadlock here, but you know, rightfully so. I mean, the arguments were good, both sides.
All right, you've heard what we thought of these matchups. We'd love to hear from you. Any that we missed on big time? Any that you know, we really, you're yelling for a recount? If so, there are a couple here you got to vote for, so let's get the count right the first time. Besides voting, you can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. And hey, if you've got an extra minute, we'd really appreciate a review on whatever service you use to listen to the show, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, whatever it is. If you can do a quick review of the show, it just makes it a lot easier for other people to find the show and to become part of this Diz Dads podcast community. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Eric Anderson.
Bye, folks.
Tim Hicks.
There'll be no living with him after this.
And our Seafarers Region Captain, Josh Schusterman.
That's right. I'm the captain.
Hey, I want to recount on Restosaurus.